T-Red Fred, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Freddie?
Oh, guys, the free agent dream is over. When we signed Ben Wallace and Gasol, those teams were solid. And like they were one bet away. This is a tire fire. No one's coming here. It's cold. The taxes are high. The best we can do is a guy like Patrick Beverley over Baby Heinrich, which is fine. But I'm more concerned about, listen, we focused on Boylan. What about this player? One of the team's veterans initiated a group text that said, if you show up at practice, I'm going to fine him personally. Right. Who do you guys think that is?
I don't know, but I said this yesterday or the day before. As much as the Jim Boylan, hey, I'm going to show you and tell you how, more importantly, to tell you how tough I am, that one's hard to deal with. A group that had six combined wins, anybody on that team trying to threaten about a walkout or not practicing, none of it smells right.
Yeah, I would guess it's either Holiday or Zach LaVine.
That's exactly right, Sylvie. It's one of those two. If it's Holiday, he should be cut or traded in a week. But my problem is, if it's LaVine, I mean, doesn't that bother you? Especially considering that Lori said, hey, we're going to go to practice. You got a fracture between two of your best players. I'd say if it is LaVine, you got to trade him. You got to call the Lakers and say, what do you want for Ingram and whatever? How about we give you
because the front office is so creative, right?
Hey, Sylvie, I'm afraid I'm starting to go down the rabbit hole with you.
I thought that was impossible.
The bus is going over the cliff here because this is as bad as I can remember.
I think this is worse than the Floyd years. We're not coming off a championship. This may be as bad as it's ever been.
Here's another thing that you and I talked about. I thought Lopez showed some leadership. Lopez said, look, you know what? I've been in this league for better than a decade. This is not how you handle it. You handle it with maturity and professionalism, which may lead to them not being willing to trade him because he's one of the only sane guys in the building.
Now we need to play Robin Lopez more.
Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Chicago Bullseye. We have a very special guest today, NBC Sports Chicago's own Bulldog, Kevin Anderson, Bulls expert, Star Wars expert, Bullseye favorite, and based on your emails, a favorite of a lot of the listeners out there. So Kevin and I really struggled to find things to talk about. It's been such a boring week. Nothing to say. Let me just respond a little bit. Just because I shared some disappointment yesterday on the Waddle and Sylvie show, some of you have reached out to me via email and Twitter and said, you know, hey, Fred, are you off the bus? Let me be clear. I am not off the bus. The bus is on fire. You know, we're down to one tire. The muffler's gone. I have the chosen one, Ricky O'Donnell, using the Force to throw various objects at my bus, like Vader was throwing things at Luke in Empire Strikes Back. But I'm driving this bus, even if it's over a cliff. I'm staying on, because big picture, if you step back and you ignore the committee nonsense and some of the ridiculous moves by the coach and players this past week, I still love Lauri Markkanen. I still love Wendell Carter Jr. And those two are definitely worth celebrating, and those two will not allow this season, in my opinion, to finish as a catastrophe. I just don't believe it. I will say somewhere between Coach Warm Milk Hoiberg and Coach Windsprint's Boylan, there's a happy medium. Let's try and find it. We're too far in the hole, though, to expect playoffs. The Bulls have lost more games due to injury than any team in the NBA. And I don't think it's doable anymore. So that said, we're getting healthy, finally. And I'd like to see some better competitive play. There's too much talent in this team to be hanging out with Atlanta for the entire season. One other note I do want to say before we get into the interview. I've seen a lot of anger, frustration, understandably so. This week has been a disaster. Kevin and I will get into that. But let's also get real for a second here. Several people I respect, state that the Bulls were lucky to get Rose. They were lucky to get Noah. The Bulls were lucky to get Lowry. They were lucky to get Wendell Carter Jr. Some people even stated something in effect that those were the best players available. Let me be clear. It wasn't lucky to ignore 40% of the fan base who were clamoring for Beasley since we already had a point guard in Heinrich. That wasn't lucky. It wasn't lucky to get Noah, who was only available at 9 because of the Curry trade with the Knicks. And then when most people were clamoring for Spencer Hawes, myself included, That wasn't luck to draft Noah. It wasn't lucky to draft Lowry either as the clear best player available when the entire draft party I attended at the Doug Tonis household let out an audible gasp and outright anger at Paxson for passing on Dennis Smith Jr. I wanted Monk, but it wasn't lucky to pick Markkanen. And one more thing. It wasn't lucky to get Wendell Carter Jr. because I spent far too much time arguing with people to move up so we can get Mo Bamba. Far too much. So there's a lot to criticize. I understand the frustration. But let's bring some honesty. And finally, an answer to the 10,000 emails I received complaining about Boylan. And I know it's hard to see the big picture here with your head so close to Tibbs' posterior. But you can't wax poetic for years about the maniacal practice and game habits of Tom Thibodeau and then throw your hands up and act like it's a complete outrage that Coach Jim Boylan decides to have a few long practices in his first week and throw some in-season conditioning also. You just can't do it. I mean, if you look what happened on January 20th, 2015, Boylan didn't take over a team with MVP Rose and Noah and Taj and Dang in their prime. My biggest issue with Tibbs was his game minutes, playing 40-plus on a back-to-back. Go look at Noah's game minutes for December 2012. It was a travesty. And if this coach even pulls something like that, I will be all over him to get his rear end out of here. None of us know what happens in practice. I do know Rip Hamilton said Tibbs was the only coach that he had where he had to ice his knees after a shoot-around. But in my opinion, this team, this young team, they need some serious discipline. I mean, no doubt there were dumb, beyond dumb statements from Coach Committee. We'll see what happens. But let's try to bring the hypocrisy down from a 10 to a 9. How's that sound? On to the conversation with the great Kevin Anderson. Follow me on Twitter, at CBEFred. Shoot us an email at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. Kevin, it's great to have you on the Bullseye again, brother. It's what trying times we are in, my friend. What trying times we are in.
It's a difficult the last 3 days, been a difficult last 3 months. This is a test your patience time we are in as a Bulls fan.
Yeah, I would argue that there are a few Bulls fans who are more more diehard than myself, and even I at this stage am feeling my core shaken with the events of the past week, and you know I don't even know what to do anymore. Sometimes I just wake up and I look at the drywall for an hour, wondering what went wrong.
Staring at the wall, contemplating life.
Exactly. It's like a 1970s Air Supply video, you know, where she's left and I don't know what to do. But let's get into it, man. Let's start out with this question, because this is one I've kind of debated with quite a few people. And I've been really conflicted or confused by the response from a lot of people who I respect. And I'm curious to get your answer to this question. By player or coach, what was the biggest sin committed in the past 8 days?
I'll start with Boylan. So, I mean, there are several issues that mistakes he made in the last 8 days. I would say I'll give you 1A and 1B. 1A is questioning publicly his players' toughness, basically saying that the reason they weren't getting to the free throw line is because they're not tough enough. That's harsh to do that publicly. I mean, that's tough. And I think 1B is the second time he did a wholesale subs against the Celtics with just under 3 minutes into the third quarter on Saturday night. To do that when at that point they were down 5-3 in the second half. To do that because you were, quote, disgusted with what you had seen and that you thought the player's performance was embarrassing and that you wanted them to sit and think about it. That was, I think, 1B in terms of significant mistakes that he made. And quite honestly, his comments after the game, I think everything that led to Sunday is certainly, it's not one moment. It's many moments over the previous 6 days that led to it, but I think the second wholesale sub in the second half of that Celtics game, and certainly his comments after the game, really led to the players having their group text and the near boycott on Sunday morning.
So you don't have the scheduled practice on Sunday in the top two?
No, I don't. I think because it led to it. See, the thing is, on face value, yes, it's been made that it's really rare that he has scheduled practice on Sunday. But here's the thing. Originally, he planned to have a hard practice on Sunday. Like, he said so in his post-game comments on Saturday. He said in his comment about the why he pulled the players and why he didn't put them back in the second half is that because he didn't, quote, want to double lose, meaning if they his starters had played significant minutes in the second half, that then he couldn't have the practice the way he wanted to on Sunday morning. And that's a significant issue, basically implying that he was going to have a very difficult and hard practice, probably more sprints and more military-style push-ups and suicides and to go through that. And I think that was the final straw. I mean, certainly it was a mistake to have the practice on Sunday. He should have never had it. He should have given the players a day off, not only because of what happened in the previous 6 days, but because of what their schedule is this week. You know, it's not just about him taking over on Monday and having a hard practice on Monday and having a long shoot-around on Tuesday and then the game Tuesday night and the hard practices Wednesday and Thursday and the back-to-backs Friday and Saturday. That's part of it. But the other part of it is they had a game Monday. They are practicing today on Tuesday. They're flying to Mexico today. Like, you guys need a break. They need a mental break. And so it's up there. I mean, I certainly wouldn't fault anyone who felt like the Sunday's practice was issue number one. But to me, there are several issues we've seen.
So you don't think anything that the players did was more egregious than what Boylan did in the past 8 days?
More egregious? No. Now let me put a caveat there that I don't think this is 100% on Boylan. I think it's 70-30. I think it's 70% on Boylan and 30% on the players. Certainly the way the players handled it on Sunday with a potential boycott is not the way you go about things. Even if it was two or three players who were kind of leading the group, which I don't believe it was. I honestly believe it was the majority of the team who was on board with doing this. And the reason I believe that is because, as we know, it's been reported that Lopez and Markkanen were the guiding forces behind convincing the rest of the players to, hey, it's our job. We need to show up regardless of what we feel about the situation. We need to show up, and then we can approach things and go from there. If the two of them hadn't said anything or felt like they were on board with it, like, that to me implies that the majority of the team, despite what narrative Boylan wants to get out there about they is not everybody, the majority of the team, I think, would have completely boycotted practice on Sunday. But that's not the way to go about things. And certainly they were considering all showing up to practice as a unified group, walking in and literally turning around and walking back out in front of the coaching staff. I mean, that's some high school level petty stuff right there. Like, that certainly would have been a horrible idea. Even not showing up at all would have been a horrible idea. So I put this 30% on the players, but you know, most of this is on, I think, the Boylan.
Okay, so we're getting to the heart a little bit, though, what I think is the biggest issue out of this entire week, which, no doubt, I mean, there's a lot on Boylan here, no doubt. And I'm more of a guy who sides with, you know, the Tibbs type of coaches who are a little bit hard, especially when this is the second youngest team in the NBA and they've sucked all year. I think a lot of the issues so far really have been a reflex reaction to going from, you know, Coach Warm Milk to Tibbs Light. You know,
sure.
To going from a guy who's just a player's coach who doesn't really hold people accountable, you know, whatever the arguments are for him or against. I think a lot of stuff that came out subsequently is just appalling. But, you know, to go from that to guy running wind sprints and suicides, it's a bit ridiculous, no doubt. I get all that. But I think that's part of the issue here that happened was to go from one extreme to the other is never good. But let's take a step back. Cause this is from Yahoo's article, Goodwill and Chris Hayes. Quote unquote, calling for a Sunday practice was apparently the last straw. So the last straw for the team, let's just stop there for a second. The last straw for a team that, you know, hey, it's rare to have a practice scheduled after a back-to-back. I would argue that, you know, Hoiberg did it earlier this year. So although rare, no doubt about that, I find it more rare to lose by 56 points in an NBA basketball game. And
sure.
In fact, it's never happened. And when that kind of loss occurs, I think a Sunday practice is completely understandable. But That's just old man Fred speaking. Let's go to the next
thing. Here's the thing, Fred. I want to respond to that first. So if they had only lost by 20, how would you feel about the Sunday practice?
I would have been against the practice. I was against the practice anyway. Like, I do understand the player's perspective here, but I think the fact that they lost in the franchise record made it far more palatable. But, you know,
but they lost by 56 because of Boylan, right? Like, here's the thing. When he rested the starters the final 21 minutes of the game, when they got taken out just before three minutes expired in the third quarter, they did not come back in at all.
Yeah, it was 20-plus. They were still...
They were down 23 at that point.
But that would also...
They were down 23.
No doubt. But that would also deny the fact that the game started out 17-0 or 18-0.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't think anyone has any problem, including the players, of Boylan pulling all five starters when they're down 13-0. Like, I don't think anybody has a problem with that. That you know, in terms of referencing, I know Boylan brought up several times in the last few days about Popovich and the way he coached. And absolutely, Popovich would have done the same thing. I think a lot of coaches would have said, the way they started that game, you pull them. But they were only down 5-3 in the third quarter when he did it the second time. And so, in terms of a 56-point loss, like, the ironic part is that when it goes down into the history books, Boylan's name is going to be next to that 56-point loss in the record books. And he's the one who created that loss. If he would have played his starters normal minutes in the second half, I'm not saying they would have won the game. I don't even think they would have really kept it within single digits, but they sure as hell wouldn't have lost by 56. So that 56-point loss, like saying, oh, we have to practice on Sunday because of the historic loss, it's his fault they lost by 56.
Yeah.
Not the players.
I completely get what you're saying. No doubt I felt the second time he did it was way overboard and embarrassing. As you said, no one has an issue with when a team, your starters start out, you know, down 17 or 18 nothing. I can't recall what the score was. It was appalling.
I think it was 13-0 when the starters came out, and then it got a little bit worse.
It was appalling. And then the team starts out in the second half, and he does it again. That was wrong, no doubt, but it's still a team. And the bench is still responsible. I mean, they're all part of the team. And the Celtics weren't playing their starters in the fourth. You had Blakeney shooting 1-9 with his typical nonsense. The whole thing was a complete disaster. And as a team, I understand why he called a practice. I didn't agree with it, but, you know, the argument that it's rare to call practice is countered with it's rare to lose by 56 points.
Sure.
In fact, much more. So, regardless, that whole situation was bad. I don't agree with what Boylan did. But that said, as bad as his decision was, I want to get to the heart of what I think was the worst, which is, so we went, he called the Sunday practice last straw. We understand. Now the vets are all angry. So it's the next, back to the Goodwill article. Late Saturday evening, one of the team's veterans, all right, let's stop there. This team's the second youngest team in the league. The quote-unquote vets on the team, it's Lopez, Holiday, you know, I guess Levine is considered a vet at 23. That's part of the issue is...
And Jabari, I guess. To
Jabari's 23, yeah. Right. 23, too. I mean, they're not vets. That's part of the issue with this team. You need guys on this team like that are, you know, 28, 29, 30 that have played in the league and understand how things are done. We got two of them. And one
we
of them, I think,
Noah
stinks.
On this team.
Yeah. Joakim Noah would have been a great choice, but, you know, he's had issues with Fred. The timing didn't work out. Like, reading everything in Memphis about the energy that he's added is like, oh, my gosh, you got a perfect cure for this. But Fred had an issue with Noah, and they don't get along. And, well, you know, regardless, I think Boylan would have been a much better fit. It's already in that same article, in the Yahoo article, it said he got along great with Butler. You know, guys like Noah and Boylan are much more in tune, I think.
Sure.
But regardless, let's still get back to this article. So late Saturday evening, one of the team's vets, sources said, initiated a group text relaying that if any player showed up to the facility on Sunday prepared to practice, he would find them personally, and the players agreed. And period. First of all, the players agreed is vague and not a true statement because Laurie and Lopez obviously didn't agree. There was also an indication that Lopez wasn't even on this group text.
Right.
So, number one, I have a major, major problem with whoever that player was who said he would find them personally. Like, who the hell are you? First of all, the fact that this is even suggested shows to me that whoever these two players are so immature and so devoid of knowledge of what it takes to be a winning team. It really shook me to the core. I just cannot believe this as a Bulls fan. I'm reading about this. I think this is the most egregious thing I've ever seen from a Bulls player to actually suggest that you don't even show up for practice. To me, it's just like, it's mind-boggling. I think the only thing that possibly beats it is Pippen sitting out the 1.8. So the question that I'd like to ask you is, who do you think those two players are?
So you kind of ran through the veterans, right? So we know it was not Lopez.
Right.
Like, you'd scratch him off the list. It wasn't Robin. Robin was one of the players who wanted them to show up. And it felt like, and as you mentioned, one of the reports said he wasn't even on that initial group thread.
Yeah.
So that really leaves it down to, I think the person that most likely is Holiday.
That's right.
It's just like it comes. It's either, honestly, it's either Holiday or Levine who led that with the probably likelihood maybe Parker. So I'd say it's one of those three for sure. And with my educated guess being it was probably Holiday.
So let's take another step back. Last week I had a conversation with a guy I went to high school. Is actually, I'm not going to mention his name because I think it is okay to say it, but he works for the Bulls, and his job is to work with the players with community services. So he kind of works and helps to set up meetings. And every time I talk to him, I love chatting with him because, you know, he'll share with me a lot of stuff about, you know, who are the good guys on a team and who are the bad guys.
Sure.
Regardless of what we feel about Jabari Parker, there's two things that really came through with that conversation. Number one, he does more in the community than any player that he's ever seen. That it's unbelievable how much this guy does. And he's a good guy, and he's very quiet and reserved. So he's not an outgoing player. He is definitely, after my conversation with him, and just by reading this, I'm 99.8% sure Jabari Parker is not one of the quote-unquote vets at 23 that this article is referring to. My bigger concern is that it's Levine. And because if he would find them personally, end quote, that's the line. Is Holiday and his salary going to find people? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. If it is Holiday, this guy has to go. Like, that is not a guy you want on your team. That is the actions of a loser. He needs to be off. My bigger concern is if it's Levine. Are you also as kind of upset about this as I am?
I am not upset to the point you are. Number one is it never came to fruition, right? It's one thing to, in the emotion of the moment, the emotion of Saturday night and what happened that game, what happened that loss, and what Boylan said after the game. I get players pissed off and venting and being like, can you believe we're having a practice tomorrow? So I can totally see a situation in which a player, in the heat of the moment, reacting to emotion, goes, you know what? He texts six or seven guys on the team and says, F this guy. Anybody that shows up to practice tomorrow, I'm finding personally. I can totally see that happening in the emotion of the moment, but it never came to fruition, right? Like, you talked about Pippen's 1.8, and there was a situation with the Nuggets, I think in like 2001, in which they did not show up to practice. Very similar situation to what we're seeing now in the Bulls, that Nick Van Exel and a couple other players like made sure no one showed up to practice. Like, that actually went to fruition. So
yeah,
it doesn't bother me as much that the Bulls talked about it, but ultimately decided the right thing to do was to show up and then have a players-only meeting and then talk to the coaches. So it doesn't bother me as much that they talked about it because, you know, quite frankly, if any of us in the heat of the moment did what we were emotionally reacted to before we kind of rationally, calmly thought about what our next course of action would be, like, I don't fault them for that. I get it. And even if it was Levine, there's a good story by Malik Andrews and Ramona Shelburne that came out on ESPN today about how Levine actually had a sit-down one-on-one with Boylan after both meetings on Sunday just to clear the air and just to make sure they were kind of, you know, understood each other and what each other felt in the moment. So I think there's a strong possibility it was Levine, or certainly it was Levine and Holiday together within that. But it doesn't bother me because it didn't actually happen. You know, it's one thing. Let's say you go back to the Pippen 1.8, like in that timeout, and Paxton is saying, all right, Pip, you're going to be a decoy on this. You're not going to get the shot, right? And
yeah.
Pippen's like, in the moment, he's like, what are you talking about? I get the shot. I'm the guy now, right? You're not going to give it to somebody else. I'm going to get that shot. But then ultimately, Pippen goes, you know what? Okay, I'll get in the team. We'll talk about it after the game. It's never an issue.
Well,
even if he would have thought about it in the moment, it's because he sat out that it became an issue.
Well, no, it wasn't an issue because Kukoc made the shot. They had a lead.
Yeah.
They had a lead at that point going into the fourth quarter. For people who don't understand what we're referring to, which is possible, in 1994 the Bulls were down 0-2 to the Knicks. They come home, and this is the year Jordan had retired. So this is Pippen's
right.
quote unquote MVP year. They're playing the Knicks. They have a fantastic. They go into the fourth quarter with I think the score was. It was like 90. I just looked at the score. It was like 88-70. 88-70 going to fourth quarter. They had one of the large. They blew one of the largest leads in NBA history, and the score was 102-102. Last place called for Kukoc. Pippen decides to sit it out. Kukoc hits the shot. If Kukoc doesn't hit that shot, there's no way they win that game in overtime with the momentum swing that happened. They're down 3-0 and they get swept.
Absolutely.
And Pippen doesn't get a chance to have what he did in Game 6, one of the greatest dunks in history. Pippen rehabilitated his image in that series. He had the chance to do it. He didn't rehabilitate it after the game. He did it in the series. So, and even with that, he still was traded that offseason to the Seattle Supersonics for Sean Kemp, and that trade was end up being nixed by the owner because of the complaints from the Seattle fans. Great story from Chaplin.
Sure.
You got to ask about one day, and he'll share with you that one. But as I digress, my point here is, and I want to go back because here's a personal story. Something like this happened to me when I was in high school. We had a coach, we called him Coach Winsprints, just like this, and we lost a few games, and he made us run. Guys were throwing up. The next game, we had two quote unquote leaders of the team suggest that we show up to the next game and forget every guy on the team forgets his basketball shoes. So we don't play, basically. And he came to me and said, and I said, no, pound sand, man. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm not doing it. And it caused a fracture within the team. Aren't you concerned that Laurie didn't agree, Lopez didn't agree, that now there's a fracture between Levine, let's say it was Levine, and Laurie, which will cause greater problems going forward?
So going back to your story, I'm assuming that eventually everybody on the team was like, all right, you're right, that's a bad idea.
No, that's the thing. That's what I think about teams. I think teams have one or two leaders on one side and another two on another side often. And if everything goes well, then they're all kind of, you know, on the same boat.
In that next game, though, for you?
So what happened was there was a side with two leaders of the team who wanted it. I'd say half the team supported that decision to forget our, quote-unquote, forget our shoes.
Mm-hmm.
The other half sided with, you know, I wouldn't call myself a leader, but I was definitely one of the people who was firmly for let's show up because the way this coach is, even if we show up without our shoes, he'll make us play in dress shoes. I'm not doing that. You know, it was just insane. The dumbest idea I've ever heard, right? The whole team fractured, and for the rest of the season, nobody really talked to each other. It was a completely different vibe. That's
so what
my
happened
concern
in that
here.
Game, though?
Oh, we lost by like 40.
But did half the team show up in dress?
Exactly like what happened here. Eventually, everything worked out, right? They all showed up. But just the suggestion that you make something, you do that, and you threaten other players lingers. That lingers. And what happened here, I am certain Laurie, when he got that text, if he was on it, Lopez wasn't even on the text string, said, give me a freaking break. And I believe that even other guys on the team said the same thing. Yeah, we're not going to show up to practice? What are you kidding me? You know, we're getting paid millions of dollars. We're not going to show up to practice. How's that going to work out? I completely agree with the idea. Let's show up to practice and as a team say, we're not practicing. We're going to have a meeting. Understandable. That happens with almost every team in the NBA. Again, the idea that I'm going to fine you if you think about showing up. You referred to that Nick Van Exel with Dan Issel thing. That was national news. That was a major deal. And there were ramifications for that happened with that franchise for years.
They actually threatened to boycott the game itself, that next game.
Exactly. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Bulls never went that far, but to me this is almost as egregious, and I think – there are questions within that team. There are guys who sided with Laurie, and there's guys that sided with LaVine. And that won't be fixed. I don't think it will be fixed anytime soon. Am I nuts with that concern?
I don't know if it's going to cause a long-term issue. I think most guys, Robin and Laurie from everyone, you know, Blakeney on down, I think everybody realizes they had an extremely difficult first week. As difficult a week as you can have as an NBA player, not only in terms of emotion, but in terms of practice and exhaustion and games and losing, even the win they had. Lost in all of this is certainly the big win they had against the Thunder.
Yes.
On Friday. And so, I don't think there's going to be a carryover effect. I think it's going to be, in terms of the players, now there could be a carryover effect in terms of the interaction and certainly the feelings between the players and the coaching staff. But in terms of the players themselves, I don't think this is serious enough that they're going to go, all right, I'm not going to talk with you. I'm not going to hang out with you anymore. It's not like one guy, you know, cheated on another guy's wife. You know, it's not like splintering like that. It's just guys being emotional going, you know, I don't think we should show up to practice. And the fact that the veterans, the true veteran, Robin Lopez, convinced the players to show up, and they realize probably now that was the right move to do.
That was.
I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Do you have the concerns that like I do? Like if I find out it was LaVine who said I'm going to fine you if you show up to practice. If I find out it was LaVine who said, you know, if he was the guy behind this whole decision and the guy actively trying to recruit other players not to show up to practice, that just causes me to question his leadership. Like, I think it's insane. I don't think that's ever appropriate on any planet. I can't believe how many people have just, like, gone and defended him for these actions. Like, if this was Tibbs, if that was Tibbs coaching the team, who would side with the player? I understand why Tibbs bought a lot of goodwill for all those seasons, right? Yeah, but he also walked into a team when MVP Rose and Noah in his prime. And
sure.
Taj with his prime, and he walked into a good team. This guy walks into a, you know, garbage fire, and you know he wants to play it a little bit harder. And I just don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's the right action. So much so that I'll say this: I like your opinion. I'd like to trade LaVine if this is true. Like,
well,
I think
let me put it this way. So what has been a very common theme in terms of this Bulls team this season? It's like I almost hear it asked every week. I mean, the players talk about it, certainly with Wendell Carter's comments about 3 weeks ago. Who's the leader on this team, right? Isn't that like a common question in terms of the questions we have on this team right now? Who's the leader? What if I were to tell you that this whole situation, everything that happened in the last 3 days, that Zach LaVine has emerged as the leader, and one of the things that had him emerge as the leader on this team is what happened on Saturday night?
I think this could ultimately
be a good thing. If he won the respect of his players for stepping up and going, hey, you know what, I feel the same way, I just didn't feel comfortable saying it, this could end up being a good thing. I think this could end up being a way in which LaVine does emerge as a leader, and him having a one-on-one with Boylan afterwards, you know, the Bulls don't have captains, which not every team does. I think it's probably a good idea for the Bulls to go back to having a captain or two, because the idea that they need a leadership committee to have a players approach Boylan if something truly is egregious, that they can air it out in private, that's what captains are usually for in a team. But to me, Zach's emerged as that. And this could end up being a good thing for LaVine.
I would counter, though, Kevin. Laurie didn't agree with Zach. Like, the guy who I think is the best player in his team, who has the highest ceiling, is Lauri Markkanen. I've been saying it since the beginning of the year. I want LaVine to take a secondary role on the team to him on the offensive end. Not even talking about the locker room. And I have serious questions that these two – have we seen, like, three games where these two have played well together?
Well, my God. I mean, how many games have they played together, period?
You're right.
I mean,
not a lot.
It's not much.
And
there were stretches. I will say that. In terms of on the court, there were stretches in the first half last night that I felt like they were productive together and that they ran the high screen and roll together, and there were some very good things happening offensively with the two of them playing at the same time. But it's going to take a lot of time to happen, a lot of time.
So you don't have the concerns I do, regardless of these leadership issues. I'm talking just basketball-wise. Like, I have concerns that these two can can be winners together, just because LaVine is so awful defensively, and like his shot selection down the stretch of games is appalling.
He has really struggled, and we saw that in several close games under Hoiberg, in which LaVine did not get a good shot off, turn the ball over without an unforced error, if you will. And yeah, I mean there are concerns there, but at the same time, like with a young team, with a really young team, like you want LaVine to go through those growing pains, and you want him to learn from his mistakes and learn from every situation, so that when it does matter, that he can maybe perform. And certainly in a lot of those close games, if they would have had Markkanen, they would have won several of those close games they lost, because, quite frankly, the only offensive option at the time was LaVine. And when you have Markkanen out there, teams can't trap LaVine yes. off the high screen and roll when you run it with Wendell, because no one's respecting Wendell's perimeter jump shot. You do that with Laurie out there, Laurie's going to hit that three, and they're going to win the game.
Yeah, very good points. I mean, I would also say, though, LaVine showed a horrible issue with turnovers. And I brought yes. this up, and I tried to give a subtle shot, like, hey, he should work on that in practice, in a tweet today. And Joshua Siegel, who I respect, replied, nah, he has proven he has no feel for the game. You can't teach that. That being young excuse doesn't work anymore, was his reply. And I kind of meditated on that for a minute. And I'm concerned he may be right. Like, there's some players that just don't have a really great feel. And it's hard to describe what that is. And his turnovers are just out, they're killing us, and they're just out of hand. And for a player who's at this point in his career, I don't see it improving. Is my concern overblown, or do you feel like, hey, this is an issue?
Well, there's two reasons for the turnovers. One is he's a little bit sloppy with the ball. But number two, and to me actually more the primary reason, is his usage. Like, he's got the ball in his hands
yeah.
a huge amount of every possession. And the reason for that is that Chris Dunn, prior to last night, hadn't played yet, and it certainly was on a minutes limit last night. And I think hopefully by Thursday, and certainly by a couple of games after that, Chris Dunn will be the primary ball handler. So when we see that, just by that alone, LaVine's turnovers are going to come down. Now, does he need to work on a little bit and not be as careless with the ball? Absolutely he does. But I'm not greatly concerned that LaVine is this turnover machine just because he's not a point guard, right?
Yep,
and also, you also have to realize that while his turnovers are up, his assist numbers have been gone through the roof too.
Yeah, that's true.
So
it sounds like you're a little bit more higher on LaVine than I have. Maybe I'm just – it's just after effects of this weekend that just have really turned me off to him. But it sounds like that you – let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. I feel that the team, in order to maximize where it needs to go, has to have Markkanen as the focus. Do you feel that Markkanen could be more of that Beta and Robin to LaVine's Batman? Would you be concerned about that if that's how it unfolds?
I agree with you in the sense that I think Markkanen has the greatest ceiling of any player on this roster right now. I think Markkanen's got the potential to be a perennial all-star. Now, that's not to say I think LaVine is just an average player, because he's certainly a dynamic scorer. But I have significant concerns that LaVine will ever be even an average defensive player.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, he is very, very poor defensively. Look at the ESPN's Real Plus Minus defensively. I mean, he's in the last like 10 players in the league in that. I mean, it's a huge concern of mine is how he plays defensively. But he has gotten a little bit better. Jabari Parker, our favorite guy to pick on defensively, has actually gotten better the last few weeks defensively with his rotations and recognizing where he needs to be on the court. He's not perfect. He makes a lot of mistakes. But at the same time, and regarding LaVine, I think LaVine has, in terms of scoring, the potential to be a 25 points per game scorer in this league, a consistent 25 points per game scorer. And that's a ceiling that 90% of the league will never get. And so when you've got someone with the ability of that who's got a decent perimeter jump shot, I'm okay to forgive the defensive inefficiencies if you have someone on the wing with him who's an elite defensive player. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah,
like if you've got a really poor defensive player at the two, you need an elite defensive player at the three.
Or at the one. And Dunn, who could be
versatile. At the one. But you need more so. Dunn is a plus defensive player. That's absolutely true. but I think you still need, you can't have a sub defensive player at the three when you play LaVine at the two. But no. Ultimately, to answer your question, I think Markkanen is eventually going to be the best player on this team. He's got the best career of anybody on this team right now. And, yeah, I think you can have a great team with the focus going with Markkanen, absolutely.
Yeah, I know it's pretty in vogue. And, I mean, even the biggest defenders of John Paxson have been, obviously, it's not a good day. Definitely not a good day. I always have defended him. I think he's an elite judge of talent. You know, as I said before, there's only four front offices that have drafted three All-NBA players. You know, Lou Alden can make an all-star team, but it's very rare to make an All-NBA team. That means you're top 15. Danny Ainge has never drafted an All-NBA player, and it's, you know, Oklahoma City, Golden State, the Spurs, and the Bulls, and that's it. But and the last two picks have been very good, but the some of the stuff outside of it, and all this nonsense and drama, it's really hard to defend. I'm on record saying, you know, if Boylan doesn't work out, we need to try something else, as long as it's not Sam Hinkie. And I think it sounds like you're probably on that road, too.
Yeah, or I mean, the thing is, we've got 15 years under Paxson, right?
Yeah.
And not too many front offices get the tenure where they can hire five head coaches. Like, yeah. That's really rare. It speaks to the confidence that Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf have in Paxson. It speaks to, you know, just the, you know, what we had at one point. Here's the thing. As any front office, you can't guarantee a championship. All you can do is put your team in a position to win a championship. And Paxson did that in 2010.
Yes.
He put his team in a position to win a championship. And through a cruel twist of fate, we know what happened then. But in terms of a front office, that's all you can do. But this mess we are in right now, this situation in which the front office is completely back Boylan. Like, you made the comparison to Thibodeau. And it's a valid comparison between the coaching styles and the motivational techniques of Boylan to Thibodeau. I mean, he essentially is Thibodeau 2.0. But the difference between the two is Thibodeau had good, if not great, teams he was coaching his entire tenure here.
Yes.
And you great. Coach yeah. that team. If you lose by 56 when you've got Rose, Butler, Noah, and Taj and that entire group that he had, I mean, you absolutely believe Thibodeau would have him probably in the gym for 15 straight days
yeah.
if you lose by
yeah.
56. But with this roster we have right now, you know, they lose by double digits to Sacramento. They've had a lot of really blowout losses. They've had some really bad losses this season. How are you really judging this roster? Because they aren't, like, in terms of, like, the second half against the Celtics, it was made up of primarily G League-level players playing that second half. So when the deficit went from 23 to 33 at the end of the third quarter, and then eventually 56 at the end of the fourth quarter, like, what do you expect? You're playing a half the Windy City Bulls starting lineup in that second half. It's going to happen. And so the fact that you go out there and say, oh, I can't believe the Windy City Bulls lost by 56 to the Boston Celtics, what do you expect? You took your starters out. So, you know, you can't motivate guys the same way as if you're one or two seed expectations. Like, the way Brad Stevens is going to motivate his team and react to certain things is very different how Boylan should react to his team.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. You know, like, people who have just flipped out, how could this happen? I've pointed out the similarities because the quotes are so similar to what happened in January 20th, 2015 in Tibbs last year here, where the Bulls had, I think they were, they had four games in 6 days, and the team had been expecting a day off, and then Tibbs called a practice. And
yeah.
the whole team rebelled, basically. They went above them, went to management, and they said, this is insane. The exact same thing basically happened, except there wasn't a guy, I don't know who's feeding the writers this inside information, but there's somebody on the team who's giving them everything. And, to me, the difference was that team, those players, they earned the right to say pound sand, Tibbs. Like, those guys had done something. I don't understand that a couple of the fans are saying, oh, he's pushing these guys too hard. This team has done nothing. If you're supportive of Tom Thibodeau and his tactics, and Rip Hamilton said he was the only coach he played for that he had to ice his knees on a shoot-around, then why are you criticizing this guy for working these guys too hard who have done nothing? That, to me, that's the argument to work them harder. Like, they're young. I didn't really have a problem with Thibodeau besides playing guys 44 minutes a night on a back-to-back. I thought that was insane, and I think science has proven me correct on that one. But, you know, I digress. I just – it's a disastrous situation. Going forward, is this even fixable this year? I mean, what do you think is going to happen from here on out?
Well, I mean, this year, clearly, you know, it's not about wins or losses. Like, right now – the primary focus of the coaching staff and the primary focus of the front office is got to be to evaluate our Dunn specifically, our Dunn, Markkanen, Levine, and Carter. Are they the four we are moving with to build a playoff caliber team? Like that's all you can do. That's all you can do as a front office coaching staff is get as many minutes of them on the court together, find out if they work, and specific to Dunn, find out if he's the point guard of the future. And so that's all this team is really about right now. You're not going to make the playoffs. You've got to essentially win 65% of your games to make the playoffs at this point, where they are at 6-22. So, you know, that's what this season's about. And here's the bigger question, and here's where long-term it gets really murky is, and in fact, Boylan was asked this prior to the Kings game on Monday night. He was asked, are you concerned of what's happened here and that your approach is going to impact a marquee free agent signing with this team next July? And Boylan's response was, nope, he's not concerned at all, because any player that they sign is going to be someone who would want to practice after a 56-point loss. And I think that is, I'm very concerned hearing that statement. Extremely concerned hearing that statement. And that is, talk about your head in the sand about responding that way. Like, you think you're even going to get a meeting with Kawhi or Durant or Clay or any of the other marquee free agents this summer? They're not. They're not even going to get a meeting with them.
No, agreed.
And so then, like, you've got potentially $40 million in cap space this summer. What are you going to do with that money if all the elite players go, yeah, we're not even going to talk to you because they see the Chicago Bulls as the Sacramento Kings, right? Like, it would be unheard of before if a player wouldn't even give the Bulls the time of day, right? Like, they were guaranteed to get a meeting with LeBron, with Carmelo, with Wade, with Bosch. You know, they get a meeting with whoever they wanted to in the past. It's one thing to go, you know what, we're not going to sign any free agents because we're a cold city, because of where we are. People want to play in Miami because it's warm and you don't have to state taxes. You're not in New York. You're like, I get it. Like, but to not even get a meeting, that's going to be embarrassing. So, like, how this impacts this organization this summer is my biggest concern right now.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Well, first of all, I believe that there was a slight chance, however slight, if this team won 41 to 47 games, kind of like what happened when they signed Ben Wallace, who was the number one free agent in that marketplace.
Yep.
If you can prove that you have a young team and you're one piece away, which is a three, and if you drop Durant, if the Bulls were healthy and they were 500 and showing signs of growing, and Durant says, that's a situation that looks good and I can come in there and we can win a title, then they'd have a shot. They have zero time. There's no chance now. They're too bad. Nobody's going to go into that situation. The Knicks are laughable, too. Maybe the Knicks could because of just their unique situation and the challenge. But that's not here in Chicago. So that's dead. Right? What I'm concerned about is Holiday played 34 minutes last night. And Hutchinson played 6. Like, what the heck is going on? Like, guys, it's either a front office or Boylan has to understand, hey, this season's over. Like, Holiday is not part of our future. What is he doing playing 34 minutes and Hutchinson's playing 6? Makes absolutely no sense.
I mean, that's going to be resolved, I think, fairly soon, right?
Yeah.
Like, but it's almost a guarantee that Holiday's going to be traded before the trade deadline in February, and I think it'll be closer to December than mid-February when he gets traded. I mean, you're absolutely right. In terms of development, You want to get Hutchinson some more time. And then here's what also really bothered me about Saturday and benching the starters for that last 21 minutes is this group, specifically Markkanen, Levine, and certainly Carter in his first year, have had no playing time together on the court. Like, you can't tell me that a Sunday practice is more valuable than the three of them playing together against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference.
100% right. You're 100% right. Exactly. That's what I had a problem with, Markkanen not starting. What good is it in Markkanen playing in Fred's last game with Shaq Harrison and, to finish off a game with Shaq Harrison? Give me a break. There's nothing more important than Markkanen and Levine and Wendell Carter Jr. playing together, period. Like, 30
minutes
together.
And Dunn last night. Like, why was Dunn not starting? I get he was on a minutes limit, but I want to see Dunn with the starting unit.
Agreed. That's what we need to see. We need them to see, can these guys build chemistry and be a good team? And everything else, it's so frustrating. And that, to me, is the biggest point here is, like, Holiday needs to go, and I don't even want to wait till February. Like, Hutchinson, this is a guy who wasted a first-round pick on. Let's see what he can do. And I don't care if he screws up. I don't care if we lose every game. That's what we want to do now because it's tank again. This is – what are we doing? You know, it's like – what good is it if we go on a 10-game winning streak from this point? We're not going to make the playoffs.
By the way, Fred, in having our conversation, your sea redness has taken a hit. Like, it's really been, your confidence has been shaken. I have expected you to completely 100% side with Boylan in this whole situation and go, you know, it's all on the players and that this team is fine, they're going to be fine. So, like, in our conversation, I'm a little shocked by where you are right now. You may have to retire the Sea Red Fred moniker for a few months.
How dare you? I'll never retire that. I still believe, like, and no one will agree with me here, I think Wendell Carter Jr., Markkanen, I used to believe last week. I'm not sure if I believe it anymore because Levine has really disappointed me. But those three is enough to build around. You know, I didn't think we needed another guy. Now, and let's be realistic here. The Bulls, I saw it on the stat yesterday that you put up. And thanks for putting up all those. Is that you doing that, by the way, with the authentic fan?
I'm not going to reveal my sources on that.
How many times I've seen that? Hilarious. You wouldn't believe. You should see my phone. Fred, you were on TV. What's going on? What happened? How many times I get these things going off when you get
Fred's
when you
on it? TV on Mark's tweet. That's the best part of it. It's not like you tweeted that.
It's always Mark. So. I got to get one of my kids to teach me Photoshop so I can pull one on him. What was I going with this? Oh, yeah. Just like a week ago, and now I've lost it, you know, like where I thought Levine could have been the part of a big team. Like, I even think, let me throw this out at you. Would you object to this? Call up the Lakers and say, what would it take to get Brandon Ingram here for Levine? And, you know, so it's going to be Ingram. Obviously, you need to make the salaries match. Would you be open to that?
I'm not sure Ingram's got a higher ceiling than Levine.
Okay.
Like, that's, like, to me, that is maybe equal, if not slightly lesser, trade. I don't think it's a move you go, okay, this is going to put us over the top. I agree with you to a certain point that certainly Markkanen and Carter and Levine are a good start to building a championship team, but I think they're two significant pieces away. I think piece one, they're going to get in the draft this year because they're God willing, going to have a top four pick. And if they have a top four pick, that's all they need. You get in the top four, you're going to get an elite player.
Yes.
You're going to get somebody great. Whether it's Zion or Barrett or Reddish or Little, you get one of those four guys and you've got somebody you can plug in that is going to be great for years to come. But even with that, even with the top four pick, they still need one more piece, like one more elite-level player to build around. Now, maybe that's an elite-level role player, but they need one more piece.
See, I would just disagree in the fact, I think what they need to do, one more draft pick, no doubt, and it's got to be a good one, and you got to hit another homer here, and then say that's the core, and we need to upgrade every position. And I'm talking about upgrades like 2010 upgrades, like, you know, Korver, those kind of quality role players that are elite at their position. Patrick Beverley's a guy. Bring him in. No more Ryan Archer, not in the NBA. I want Patrick Beverley as the backup point guard. I want, you know, guys like that are pros, that are vets, that can
help. I love Beverley. I mean, you talk about defensive intensity.
Absolutely.
You bring him in here. Yeah.
Exactly. Like that, that's the kind of quality player that you bring in. That's an older 1 year, 2 year deal, because we're not getting any big free agents. And then suddenly you got four young guys, Wendell Carter Jr., Markkanen, maybe LaVine. I would be open to trading for Ingram. I love Ingram. And then whoever you bring in. Now, my nightmare scenario, have you been following the college game?
A little bit. You know, I'm not huge on college basketball. I follow college basketball for scouting, yeah. And that's about it for the NBA. But, you know, I'm not going to – so like, I'll watch Duke play, certainly, for their big three. You know, I'll watch Kentucky and Kansas. But I'm not usually sit down and watch, like, a random college basketball game.
So I have a concern that, you know, Zion's going to be number one pick. He's an absolute freak athlete. He's incredible. But aren't you a little worried that – I don't know if he fits –
Zion is so good and such a LeBron James type anomaly that I'm not concerned about. Well, he doesn't fit because you've got Markkanen and Carter up front, right? And yeah. Those two guys certainly are your front court of the future. But if you get a chance to draft Zion, if you're picking number one and you're taking Zion, or you're picking number two and somebody passes on Zion, for whatever unknown reason, you take Zion. I just think he is going to be an elite level player, and he's got a skill set which is unrivaled by anybody currently in the league. I mean, you know, yeah. So what if he's got to play the three, or if he's got to start on the bench? They can make it work. Like in his perimeter shot will come. Like he's got a work ethic that is he'll get there. He'll get there with
so.
It. So I'm not concerned that it's not a fit. Like. If he's available, you take him. Now, with that being said, if you're picking third and Zion and Barrett go 1-2, yeah. I'm totally on board with Nassir Little or Cam Reddish. I think both are going to be great players. So I think you get in the top four, you're going to be in a great position.
Agree 100%. I don't want to mean like, hey, you're going to lose with Zion. That's not all I'm saying. I believe he's going to be a great player, but he's not a great shooter. Hopefully that will come. And like this team... We have our 4 and 5 set, right? And I think he's a 4.
Yeah.
I think that's where.
Yeah,
he should
absolutely.
Be playing.
I think his best fit is at the 4, certainly. But at the same time, if he's there, you can't pass on him. You've got to take him,
brother. It's always great to talk to you, man. You gave me more than enough time, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, Kevin. Always great stuff. Where can we find you? And give us the 411 on everything that. You want to talk about?
Yeah, so you can certainly find all our work at NBC Sports Chicago at NBCSportsChicago.com. We've got some great videos daily with everything that's happening at Bulls practice, as well as articles from Mark Schnowski and Mark Stroman, who's been doing an amazing job filling in for Vinny Goodwill, who's certainly gone to Yahoo at the beginning of the season. So we've got some great pieces on that. Schnowski and Kendall and Will Perdue do great breakdowns of game video, which I'm really proud to be involved in. So there's good stuff there. And certainly personally, you can find me on Twitter at Kevin_NBCS for all my insightful analysis and certainly projections about the salary cap and what's going on. And certainly I'll throw in a Star Wars meme or GIF at some point there too.
Nobody does that better. Star Wars and cap, salary cap. If you want it, you got to go to Kevin. You're the best,
hey, that's
brother.
It. I think I'm the only one doing it, so therefore no one does it better.
Sounds good, man. All right. Great talking to you, brother, and talk to you again soon.